And my biggest bugbear is black groups.
And there is there's almost a triple message there. The development industry has taught the customer that what is aesthetic is this thing. This has been reflected in some councils in regulation, where a planner doing their job of ticking the boxes says, oh, it has to have dark colours, not just roofs. Sheds have to have black walls. The sheds are uninhabitable in terms of storing stuff. But apparently performance doesn't matter. So we're going to have a legacy, when that ultimately gets turned around, which it will, usually on performance grounds, we will have a legacy of that which was built in the meantime. Now, roofs are not bad. We can get some nano ceramic paint in a spray gun, and we can paint it a light colour, and the reflective ceramic things will reflect the heat off as well, so we get a double benefit. That is a relatively small cost for a future owner. So it's overcoming the presumption that the customer wants something which they don't actually want. They've just been told that it is the desirable, and so then there's ongoing work about. And so state government has said, let us use the northern suburbs and put an edict in that's no black roofs allowed. And there's pushback. What a surprise. But there's enough understanding that here is an issue that has a societal impact. Effectively, the heat island is warm. And government acting for society is saying that is an impost on us. We can't tackle the fact that it's an impost on the owner or occupier of the building, but it is an impost on us collectively that we must negate, because that's the increased energy use of the air conditioners that we all... So there is... You've got a pincer movement of some people from the bottom end saying, no, don't do this. The cost on the occupant is just too high. And then there's a bit from the top going, I keep being told by people that this is a bad thing for society. Let's start putting some limitations on it. Pity we have to go that way around, when it would be so much easier to do it from the middle, but saying the customer is well enough educated to understand that this is not a good thing for them or for society. That's not the real world. That's one of the accommodations that's happened over four decades. Is you fight the fights you can.
Yes.
And sometimes you even fight the fights you can't win just to put the stake in the sand.
Yes.
That the issue is still there.
I've wondered why people haven't replicated this, and I've actually tried myself with various organisations to have more people live like this.
Yeah.
And the hurdles are huge.
The hurdles are... I want to live the way everybody else lives because I want to get along with everybody else. As I come from an immigrant background, I struck this very much when I was young. Don't look different, don't be different, be like the herd. And it's the easy path, because everybody from the developer through the regulatory process to the selling agents all agree.
Mm.
So I'm hemmed in. And if I do this weird stuff, if I come to sell, there may not be someone as weird as me who wants to buy. Now, my experience, again, over the couple of hundred houses I've done out in rural South Australia, the one that really stands out is we built a set of tin sheds because it was easy to prefabricate and bring it in on site, minimum waste stream, could stand the thing up from within its own footprint, no environmental damage to the property. They built it for $30,000 and 12 years later sold it for $300,000. So,
can you publish that?
And it has been published, but of course it's been published years ago from what it was. And again, it is a building that I think is very aesthetic, but then I have a very strange sense of aesthetics to begin with. And obviously the people buying it were really wrapped.
Mm.
It's effectively a glass box with tin roofs over the top, so you have 360 views of the outsides in sort of traditional Australian bushland. So you've got big open areas, with salt bush, and then you've got the few scraggly guns. It's not bushland as the eastern coast would understand. So it has an aesthetic that is very much, and so the zinc loom roofs very much reflected the ground pattern. I found that reassuring, and that's been pretty much successive experiences over the years with people on average will sell up every 7 years. So I have quite a few buildings, and I get to know about them because people invite me back to see how they're working, to quite often ask me how to run the place, because free-running buildings are not easily accessed to learn. So I keep a little bit of a handle on other buildings and how they're going and how people are treating them. Of all of them, I've had one consumed by bushfire, and the people had left early, and that's fine. And I've had six others impacted by bushfire, but they all survived. They were all deliberately built to be resistant, far more resistant than minimum compliance. And people stayed to defend and were successful. And I was able to sit with them afterwards and talk about the experience of pulling shutter down and hearing the roar of the fire coming when you're sitting inside, watching the aluminium shutter bend outwards towards the fire because of the suction of oxygen and the deep channels that they'd insisted on rather than the slimline channels that the salesman was trying to sell them had held. And then when the fire went over, as the aluminium cooled, the shutter came back and was still functional after the event.
And when was that?
This was 2019 in the Cuddly Creek fire.
In the Cuddly Creek?
It was in Lobethal, and the family, we had had very serious conversations about, and they said, we know, no fire truck will come, they'll be too busy. And they were, the town of Lobethal was on fire, so they fire trucks were fully committed there. And they said, and I walked around the property, because I go into fire ground with my command car as part of my role. And they rang me and they said, oh, you might like to drop by. We've been through the fire front. Come and have a look. And the remains of the hoses that they've been fighting the fire with were molten on the ground. And they as a family had simply fought the fire while they could. They had everything prepared, drew back into the house, sat and just... And it's why I say people should not expect to stay and defend. The sound of the freight train going over the top of your house as the fire front hits the building. And I've got the photographs of the fire burnt right up to the base of the building. There were pot plants on one side. The plants burnt, the pots burnt, and the soil burnt. It was that intense. And there's just a smear mark of the fire intensity on the wall. And they basically went, yeah, we knew what we were doing. Yeah, we knew this place is going to survive. Yes, it was very interesting to sit there. And I've had other families where one family, the family actually disintegrated afterwards because half the family did what this family did, said, it worked. Yeah. We designed it, we built it, we operated it, it works fine. But in the other case, half the family went, we don't ever want to be in the situation of feeling that helpless. Of, yes, we know we have an internal hose reel. Yes, we know we're in a bathroom that's completely enclosed and fireproof. But just that sound and just the impossibility, you can't go out. There's nowhere else to go to. And that family literally split in half, and half the family stayed and the other half of the family left, went. We're never ever going to want to be in that circumstance again. It's a reminder that everything that we do in our built environment is about human outcomes.
Yeah.
It's the human factors that become dominant. And we never talk about that. The salesman will talk to you about the benchtop, you know, with the manufactured stone and all that carry on, the colours and the such and such fit out. But when it really matters, you know, when our human survival is there, it's how we are able to react. And the building can make a positive contribution to that, but sometimes it can't make enough of a contribution. Mm. And we are so fragile that we won't know that until after the event. So I've had those... So I'm very, very fortunate. I talk to a lot of my past clients, and in general, they're talking about the day-to-day and the functionality and the behaviours and how they have to be aware of certain things. But when it's put under extremes, and I've got those seven examples of the bushfire, you learn a lot about yourself, and you learn a lot about, yes, I was right to go way beyond minimum compliance to make that circumstance survival. So far, here I am crossing my fingers, none of my clients have died in an emergency event. Doesn't mean it, because climate change is bringing stuff at levels of intensity we've never had before. We don't know how bad the next one's going to be. 2019, 2020 was a real wake-up call, not just for Australia, but for the whole planet. Three Americans in a C-130 died in the Snowy Mountains, helping us. We send our crews to Canada, America, and Mexico. In Canada, they had, I think, seven different nations all helping them with their fires during their fire season. That is where we're at, folks. That is our obligation. That's the level at which we need to work.
It's terrible.
I guess because I'm involved in it, to me it is a reality, and I draw on that reality to help inform what I'm doing now. And to me, none of these things are insurmountable. Technology is not the problem. Human will is not the problem. It's usually our inability to understand that that is where we need to be working. And so, I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to grow into those situations and you get some real-world experience that helps you then at the front end. Okay, you intended to live here. These are the obligations that come with it. If you don't want to take those obligations seriously, leave early. Except the fact that it will probably come back to a site where the building doesn't exist anymore. That's replaceable. So, interesting evolution over a lot of decades. And I think there are, and I'm obviously working with other people of like mind. So again, we're building human capacity, and that's important.
It is important. It's probably one of the most important directions.
Since we're not going to mitigate climate change, we will just have to ride that bear as it goes, because many decades ago the philosophy was that when we get to carbon neutral, the planet will continue on a trajectory for another 250 years before it stabilises. Now, whether that's true or not, we will only find out in 250 years' time.
Well, that's right.
And so all we can do is leave a legacy that says we hope we've done something. Forget his name. Mullins. The ex-fire chief from New South Wales wrote a book called Firestorm.
Oh, yeah.
And the frontispiece simply says, I'm telling my grandkids I did what I could. It's all you can do.
That's all you can do.
And that applies through that whole process of how we create habitat for ourselves, how we live in it, how we manage it, how we pass it on, is all part of that continuum.
Well, me sitting here in this community room talking to you, I have an enormous amount of gratitude to you and Paul and Cherie.
Yep, that was an initial core. Lots of other people.
That's
the bit I really like, is many people whose names we won't publicly mention, but who made contributions, sometimes small, sometimes just the thought trigger that allowed people to go on. And so it's that communal bringing together of resource that is really a big part of all this stuff. The fact that there are some individuals in amongst all that that are, remember my name, well, that's...
Yeah, but after two major setbacks, Crystal Walk still happened.
Absolutely, yes.
I mean, the Halifax was huge.
Yes.
But the Whyalla one was too.
Absolutely.
It was huge because there was so many community groups involved and so much optimism that this would be good. Yeah. And they knocked it all down.
And
everything.
It's a reflection of that level of progress frightens some people. And if they're people of conservative nature in institutions, then that's they're not surprising a reaction. And again, we have lots of history going back millennia that says that this is how human beings are. Doesn't mean you don't have a shot.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you don't value the ones that work.
Even after setbacks.
Absolutely. And there will be others. And all of the education that's done here, all of the school tours, it's dropping little stones in ponds. And there will be, and I still do a little bit of lecturing in the university system. And I try to leave crumbs of that 30 or 40 students in that particular year, one may pick up that this is interesting, therefore maybe I'll do it. Not because I have any great ambitions to change the world, but it's interesting. So
got to remain curious all our lives, don't we?
And hopefully continue to build on. And so part of what Paul is doing with his next two books is to leave again the breadcrumbs of, we've been here, we know how this is, you can start from here rather than start from the point that we needed to start from.
Yes. And that's a huge legacy.
And legacy is nice. It's not the purpose.
Yeah. Well, I certainly think you've left a legacy
and hopefully still have a few, you know, hopefully a few decades to continue to make, because having learnt what I've learned and applied is the springboard for experimentation further on, and that keeps me enthused and young and all that sort of stuff. So that it's the the personal benefit can't be undervalued.
Yeah.
And you putting out a broadcast is an opportunity for other people to have a little bit of a sense of.
I'd like it to go far and wide. I think that's a good place to end.
Thank you very much, Sue.